So this week I want to explore the very new and developing story, and compared to other things that we've seen, Baruch Hashem, positive story of the vaccine for the COVID-19 virus. And the pleasure of having a chavrusa with Professor Zakin Wednesday afternoon. So I told him that part of this was it was very exciting, but it was also a little bit more difficult because the sources are getting written as we speak, or I think we're going to be getting ready as we speak. So some of what I'm going to say is the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral Torah of what's being said. And we are going to look in particular at one responsum of Rabbi Asher Weiss. And I'll say there are some poskim who may disagree with some of his conclusions, but from what I've seen, he's probably the main source of an actual written opinion about the different facets of the question of taking the vaccine. And just of curiosity, has anyone here gotten the vaccine, or no one who's gotten the vaccine? I know Canada, it's been slower.
I have friends in Israel that have had the vaccine.
Right, in Israel, because in Israel, they're doing it by age. So if you're over a certain age, you get the vaccine. And in the U.S., they're...
But not just age in Israel. I think not just age, because I saw a posting that some people with disabilities got it.
It could be other higher risk segments of the population.
Yeah.
In the U.S., at least in New York, they're probably one of the first groups to get it were healthcare workers or people who worked with vulnerable populations. So it happens to be, I know several people there who are in that category who have gotten the vaccine. So Baruch Hashem, it's something that developed very quickly, and we'll see if that may make it more questionable. It's something that developed very quickly, is already, you know, becoming very much a reality. And so right now we're going to look at it more to analyze the question of what should we consider about the vaccine in its early stages? Because that's a question. It was developed over compared to others, what I know, a very short amount of time. So is there room for hesitation on a halakhic level with that?
I hope so.
Certainly be as more people are able to be vaccinated, and hopefully as it will continue to prove successful, there are going to be more questions that will need to be addressed in maybe the next couple of months. Is what about immunization policies for schools, things like that? Those were all, I think, now I saw one of the first halachic discussions about this with Rabbi Mordechai Willig and Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glatt, and they said about these types of questions about immunization policies, we're not quite there yet because it's not as much of a reality, but those will all be real questions that will have to be dealt with both on a policy and on a halachic level. But right now, the main question that the halakhic authorities are asking is, one, looking at the general question about, is there an obligation to vaccinate? Is there a halakhic problem with vaccinating? And in particular with the new vaccine, should there be any halakhic hesitations? And if it's safe, does every person, when it becomes available to them, have a halakhic responsibility to vaccinate? And as we often make in our Beit Midrash, these are not meant to provide individual, you know, halakhic rulings. They say we're in such an early stage that it's not so practical. But obviously, everyone, when it becomes relevant, and hopefully it will, you know, work with their Rav and with their healthcare provider to see what course of action is appropriate. But we're going to take a look at some of what's been written about vaccination in general and about the COVID vaccine in particular. So I share my screen. So the halakhic literature on vaccinations really goes as far back as vaccinations really existed. The earliest source that I know is the smallpox vaccine developed by Edward Jenner in the late 18th century. And a mention of this is actually mentioned in a fascinating context. The Tiferes Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz, who wrote a commentary on much of Mishnayot, has a comment on a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says, Chaviv Adam Shenivra Vitzelem, that beloved is man who is created in Hashem's image. And it says there's an extra level of belovedness between the Jewish people and Hashem. So there's a discussion, how do we understand Tzelem Elokim, being created in the image of God? Ostensibly, it's all mankind is created in the image of God. There are some sources that suggest that after the giving of the Torah, that type of Tzelem Elokim became unique to the Jewish people. So that's a whole other discussion. But commenting on that Mishnah, the Tiferes Yisrael, or Yisrael Lifshitz, writing in 18th century Prussia, said that it's obvious that we can't say that there aren't people from the nations of the world who are righteous and who will get reward, certainly will get reward in the world to come. And he says, even if our sages hadn't told us this, we would know based on logic that we clearly see that there are, he wasn't living in a time where, on a whole, the non-Jewish world particularly loved the Jews, but he said in his time, it was very evident that there were some Gentiles who clearly were doing God's will in the world. And he lists others, but one of the people that he mentions is HaChassid Jenner, the Chassid, the pious Jenner. And he says, Jehimtzi, but he's called for smallpox, Shaladin Yitzulim, Kama Rivos Bene Adam Echole Umisa Mumumin. And through this vaccine that Jenner developed, it saves tens of thousands of people from illness, death, and from blemish. So he said there are purely Gentiles who believe in God, and not only that, who have done things to benefit humanity as a whole, and he mentions this case, but in other cases, the Jewish people in particular. So this is what we'll see later on. Here he's not actually presenting a halachic opinion on vaccinations, but it just provides a perspective of what Torah sages, how they understood the value of vaccinations, to say that the person who developed the smallpox vaccine is included by virtue of the fact that he developed it among the pious of the nations of the world. He says, what a tremendous contribution to humankind. That smallpox is something that every family virtually had someone who died of smallpox. And this contributed to this, thousands and thousands of lives being saved.
There was a smallpox vaccine in the 18th century?
I think that's where Jenner, I don't know if it was probably developed over time, but Edward Jenner developed it.
But the commentary is from Israel Lifshitz in the 18th century.
In the 18th century, yeah.
Hmm.
No, so it was developed around that.
Really?
Jenner lived in the late 18th century, well, the mid to late 18th century to the early 19th century.
Wow.
Again, so just in case he's not, we'll see elsewhere he presents more of a halakhic opinion, but just goes to show this is something that he viewed as so beneficial, something that helped humanity in such significant ways. Wikipedia said it was invented in 1796. Okay, so we're right at the turn of the century. So what obligation, if any, would there be to take a vaccine? So, and there are really going to be two questions. One, why should a person inoculate themselves at all? Meaning, why should a person ensure that they are immune to a disease? That's number one. And number two is going to be, well, what about risk? What if the vaccine itself is risky? How do we measure that? So point number one is, why should I have after that get the vaccine? Let's say it's halakhically permissible, but why do I have to get vaccinated, or why should I get vaccinated from a Torah perspective?
Well, if you don't get a vaccine, it's almost akin to, in some respects, suicide. There's a very, very high likelihood you'll get it. You're going to get sick. You got to prevent yourself from dying.
So there's the potential threat to one's own life. I could argue, and I think it's assumed that we don't, that it's, that we're not talking about an immediate death, meaning if someone didn't get vaccinated, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, I'm just saying if someone didn't get vaccinated, the chances of them contracting is also partly, largely because everyone else is vaccinated, but the chances of contracting smallpox or otherwise is fairly remote. But clearly at a time when people weren't vaccinated, it was definitely common. So I don't know if it would go as far as suicide, but you're certainly putting yourself at risk. You're certainly putting yourself at risk. And then the other side of the coin is, well, what about everyone else? Do you have an obligation to ensure that you are not a danger to someone else?
Sakanat nefashot.
Right. So intuitively, I think we would say yes. Obviously, I think as decent people, we don't want to harm ourselves. We don't have any interest in doing that. And we certainly don't want to harm other people. But the Torah presents, actually, based on the laws of a makkah, of when the person builds a new house, of attaching a railing on the top of the house. So based on that, you see the Rambam extends that principle to general requirement to take actions that both a person should passively avoid danger, not to enter into dangerous situations, and actively prevent and remove danger. So the Torah itself says in source number 2 in Sefer Dvarim, he said that by his chadash, when a person builds a new house, you should put a guardrail on your roof. You shall not cause blood to be spilled in your house, that the one who falls should fall from it. So the Torah is telling you, when you build a house, make sure that it has safety measures in place. And the Rambam codifies this halacha, and he expands it to not just the specific case of putting a guardrail around the roof of one's house, but he says in source number 3, echad agad ve'echad kol davar sheyesh bo sakana, this applies to a roof, as the Torah says, but also to anything that might pose a danger, v'roi shekashal ba'adam v'yambos, anything that might present a danger and cause a person to stumble and die. So for example, if someone has a well or a cistern in his courtyard, so he has to erect a sand wall to 10 tefachim high, 10 hand breadths high around there and make a cover for them, so the person will not fall in and die. And he says, what's this based on? He also connects this to other verses in the Torah that emphasize the value of both avoiding danger for oneself and not creating or enabling dangerous situations. It says in the second paragraph, there's commandment to remove anything that endangers life. So mitzvahs ase lasiro lishamer mimenu. So there are really two parts. You should remove them, and you should guard from it. Let's say lasiro, to remove it, lishamer mimenu, and guard from it. So this is generally understood as active and passive, meaning it's mitzvahs asay to remove it when you have a certain danger, and also to be careful to avoid it. And he quotes two verses: Yishamer lecha shmor nafshecha, shall be very careful, guard yourself and guard your life. Im lo hisir, and if you don't remove it, and you leave the dangerous stumbling blocks that can cause danger, so you nullify, you fail to fulfill a positive commandment of hishamer lecha shmor nafshecha, you should be very careful and guard your soul. And you also violate a prohibition. Lo sasim damim. You should not place blood. So there are two parts. There is guarding, protecting one's life. And if one fails to do that, or one enters a dangerous situation, so they're in violation of the mandate to protect one's life. They're failing to fulfill the commandment of protecting one's life, and they would be violating the commandment of not actively going into a dangerous situation. So basically, what emerges from here is there's a passive avoidance of danger. Don't go to dangerous situations. And if there's a danger, then you are required actively to remove it. So if we take this and apply it to the issue of vaccination, so how would that apply?
You're not going to get sick and you're not going to infect others.
Right. You're actively, really, there's really both components. You're doing something that you are not going into a dangerous situation, but also you're actively giving more key. You're actively preventing danger. It's both preventative, meaning you're doing something to prevent you from getting sick. And you're right. You're being proactive about that. And maybe not getting vaccinated would be neglecting to avoid danger. So we have both. We have to stay out of dangerous situations. We actively have to remove dangerous situations. Okay, but now the question is, well, what about risk? Right? What if the vaccine itself is risky? And the question, I think, is a compelling one for, let's say, the COVID vaccine. It's something that's new. What if a person is, or what if there are? What if we could say that realistically there is an element of danger in taking a vaccine? So how do we balance that with whether it's smallpox or COVID or anything else that we get vaccinated for? Am I allowed to enter into a risk because it may prevent against a greater danger?
I think so.
Why?
You know, so for my personal situation, for example, it's not advised for people who have allergies, amongst other things. So why should I take the vaccine at a risk to my own health, which is very real? Now, as long as I'm willing to keep, you know, masking and distancing so that I don't endanger anybody else if I get it.
Right. So actually, so that case, and obviously something to discuss with your doctor, but that case is a little bit, I see a distinction between that and the question that some of these sources will address. Meaning, it seems to be understood that if there's a clearer danger in taking a vaccine, and there are people with conditions for which it would be actually dangerous, if it's a more definite danger with taking a vaccine, so maybe that could be different. But the question that even from the 18th century people were dealing with, and even maybe nowadays, is what if for most people, or you know, most people with let's say you're meaning the person who's not at particular risk with the vaccine. If most people do not get harmed, but some people do, and not because of necessarily a particular health condition. Meaning if there's a certain allergy, and we know that this type of vaccine is harmful, so that could be a different story. But let's say, you know, all things being equal, most people don't get harmed, but like with everything else, there may be some harm. There may even be the Tiferes Yisrael, Rabbi Lipschitz, as she addresses, what if even there are some who may be killed as a result of the vaccine? I don't know if the vaccine was different in his time. If they were probably like everything else, it's been perfected over time. But what if there's a chance? Not that we know that there's a particular condition that it will be particularly dangerous, but it's possible. It's possible that taking the vaccine may cause you to get sick or
Or severe side effects.
Or have severe side effects, right. Or, and is it not, if it's something that's particular, that may be different. So what do you think? Are we allowed to, do something that may be dangerous to avoid a greater danger? Right, it's a little bit of more of a difficult question. I mean, we know, okay, avoiding danger is easy. You say, should we avoid danger? Yes, avoiding danger it's hard to argue with. But let's say, can I do something that there's some element of risk, but potentially it could prevent against something that's even more dangerous?
It probably depends on the percentage. And I'm a little uncomfortable with the percentage of 1 in 1,000 that I see in this tumor, because 1 in 1,000 sounds a little high.
Right. Okay. So you're getting this. It may depend on percentage. So we'll get to it. So the Tiferes Yisrael, who we saw, said how the Chassid Yenner, how this Jenner was so righteous, he improved the world so much. But he didn't say halachically should one vaccinate. He said it's a good thing. But so now actually in the Mishnah Yoma, which discusses different cases of Pikuach Nefesh, so he addresses this question. So he says, appears to me that's permitted to take the smallpox vaccine, because it says, I'll call it vaccine, and that's from the similar to inoculation, that even if 1 in 1,000 may die. Now, 1 in 1,000 may not be a specific number, but in other cases, 1 in 1,000 is used as a point in Pikuach Nefesh. Maybe the danger is less than 1 in 1,000, but it's a remote danger. But you're right, 1 in 1,000 is somewhat uncomfortably high. But you'd also have to weigh this against, potentially, against what percentage of people were dying of smallpox. Mm-hmm. It could have been, I didn't look it up, but it could be that time there were more than 1 in 1,000 people in the population were dying of smallpox. So
I think that would be safe to say, yeah.
I don't think with COVID, I don't think you would say that. Unfortunately, there are way too many. But yeah. Right, 1 in 1,000 does see high. But he says, even if there's a remote possibility of danger, but a possibility, if you have smallpox, it's more of an imminent danger to catch smallpox. It's a very fatal disease. It's a very widespread disease. And so presumably, he doesn't say numbers, but presumably it was at least 1 in 1,000 who were dying of smallpox. And therefore, Rashi Lahachnis is atzmo b'sakana rechoka, because Elahatziel is atzmo b'sakana krova. And therefore, it's permitted to enter a more remote danger to save oneself from more immediate danger. So what's the proof of this? Meaning, how can I say this? Generally, we have to balance it. We have this prohibition of entering situations of danger. So how can I enter a situation of danger just because I want to avoid a potentially greater danger? But it's not such a simple question, even intuitively. So he brings a proof. The Beit Yosef brings from Yosef Karo, brings from the Talmud Yerushalmi. That passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi talks about Rav Issa, one of the sages who was captured. And Reish Lakish said that he would basically go in and save him, but at risk to his life. So you learn from there that it's permissible to risk one's own life in order to save someone else's life. Now, why? It sounds pretty heroic, right? Why do I specifically need a source for that? Right? Isn't it always the right thing? Isn't it such a selfless thing to do, to risk one's own life to save someone else? Why do I need a source to specifically tell me this?
Because it's not always evident.
I'm sorry?
It's not clear logically that it makes sense all the time to put yourself in danger to save somebody else.
Right. It's not clear logically, but even more than that, it's not clear halachically. There's a famous dispute between Rabbi Kiva and Ben Petura. What if you have one jug of water, right? Do you take it for yourself or do you split it? So yourself. We go like the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, who says, Chayecha Kodmin. a person's own life takes precedence. You are not allowed to sacrifice your own life to save someone else.
But that's when there's certain death.
Aha. Okay. So exactly. I mean, this is why we need a source for this. Why? Because we have a principle. Chayecha kodmini. Our life takes precedence. We can't just forfeit our life for the sake of someone else. However altruistic that may seem. But he says so. According to this, you're obligated to enter a suffix sakana, a doubtful situation of possible danger. In order to save your friend from certain danger. Right, in this case, Nisi was going to be killed. Rish Lakish, we learned about him in our stories in the Talmud class. You know, he's a bandit. He was capable of going in. So for him, it was possible danger, but he saved his friend from definite danger. And he says, so therefore, if you see your friend drowning in the river, and without you, he's most likely going to die. But if you go in, there'll be some amount of risk. Hopefully, you know how to swim. So it says that you are then obligated to go in and save him. And there's actually some in the halakhic authorities. There's a question whether this is just giving permission to do so or it obligates you to do so. And again, we would need to give permission because we have a principle that you can't certainly forfeit your own life to save someone else's. So he said at the end of the day, maybe the source doesn't say that there's an obligation to put one's life in possible danger to save someone from definite danger, but you're allowed to. He says, it's not quoted in the Torah, the main code of Jewish law. It's where the Beis Yosef comments on it. So he said, it may not be that it's an obligation, but this Talmud Yerushalmi is showing you that you're allowed to do it. So if carrying this over to the vaccine, the smallpox vaccine, so he says, therefore, if you're obligated to place yourself in possible danger in order to save your friend. So he says it's certainly at least permitted to save your own body through entering possible danger. Because again, there's more of a reason to say that you should be able to save yourself than save someone else. So for sure, there's more of an imperative to save your own body. Yeah, we worry about we always want to help other people, but when the unfortunate circumstance presents itself. So maybe you need a special permission to say that you can even risk yourself to save your friend from definite danger. But for you, it's saying certainly you could put yourself in possible danger to save yourself from more definite danger. So this is, again, this is assuming that there's some significant danger. And I'm not sure if the 1 in 1,000 he was working with, I think it's numbers that were there at the time, where he's just saying, even if they are 1 in 1,000, it's not clear. But it was assuming that there's some death rate, that somebody's the vaccine, especially in its early days, 1796 onward, that there was maybe some, it wasn't perfect originally. But he says, nevertheless, you could certainly do it because smallpox is more imminent and more deadly. And so you're allowed to do something to take a risk to prevent a greater risk, certainly for yourself.
Rabbi, if the risk of catching smallpox is, let's just say it's 3%, say it's 1%, and then the risk of if you've caught it that you'll die is 10%, there's the same risk of the vaccine. So in other words, it's 0.1%, right? 1 in 1,000 is 0.1%.
Right. So it's interesting to look up in the late 18th century. What were the rates of smallpox? But probably right. If it's a 1-to-1, then it would seem to, then they would cancel each other out, presumably.
I don't think you can think of it that way today. You have to look at the fact that there are 400,000 dead Americans that wouldn't have been dead if it weren't for COVID.
No. Right. So we're not at COVID yet. This is just that the general principle. But I think Stephen's point is valid. That if it was the same, so then you don't have a basis to say, well, I'm putting myself in more remote risk to save myself from a greater risk. Maybe not putting myself at the same amount of risk. That would be harder to justify. But he says because it's a more remote risk, then you are certainly allowed to do that. And Rav Asher Weiss in his Tshuva dealing with the coronavirus vaccine, so he says that this was a discussion that was discussed among the halakhic authorities, basically at different points between 1796 and the present, or at least in the, you know, the 19th century, the question about getting the smallpox vaccine. So he said there were some halakhic authorities, Avram Hamburg, rabbi in the Netherlands, then later in London. So he discusses this question, and he cites several responsa from halakhic authorities of his time that unanimously rule that people should receive the smallpox vaccine in spite of the fact that several people had died as a result. So it seems that at that time, there were people observably who observable cases of people who died of the smallpox vaccine. But nevertheless, because smallpox was so rampant and was so dangerous, this record says, Avram Hamburg says that the halakhic authorities of his time unanimously ruled that people should take the smallpox vaccine. But there was some pushback. He quotes in the responsa Zera Emes from Rishmel Cohen of Medina. So he says that he had a responsa with Rabbi Chaim Yehuda Giron over this question. And Rabbi Giron says that it was proper to refrain from vaccination as it had caused the death of several people. So the risk to any individual in the population was remote. So presumably, the percentage-wise, the vaccine seemed to have been pretty safe. But there were known cases where they connected a person dying with the vaccine. So he says, because of that, maybe it's proper to refrain. Now why is refraining an option? There is a concept that is applicable in certain areas of halacha of sheval tase. That certain cases, if you just don't take any action, sometimes that's the best course of action in a certain situation. I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing something to actively harm myself, but I'm not taking the vaccine. So he said, perhaps we should say that. Perhaps we should take the course of sheval tase, a basic sit and don't do anything, rather than taking an action that may in and of itself carry a certain risk. So it says the Zera Emes, Rishmael Cohen, has replied at length, examining the same question. Can you actively put yourself in small risk of danger in order to avoid another potential danger? So he included that the vaccination was recommended as the relative risk of the disease was far greater than that of the vaccine. And Rav Giron, in this correspondence, Rav Giron was the one who challenged him, who said maybe we shouldn't do it. So he said, due to his uncertainty, he would recuse himself from ruling on the matter. And he could say, you know, the Zera Emes, Rabbi Shmuel Cohen, he rules on that. For me, okay, I'm a halakhic authority too, but I don't feel comfortable giving a ruling. And that was a halakhic authority allowed to do that. Generally, the Gemara says that a dayan shouldn't refuse to be on a case because he's, you know, out of certain concerns. That if a posek is capable of ruling on a question. So it's considered in general not so proper to just recuse themselves. So, but the Zera Emes, who says that it was required, he's in that situation, Rav Giron would be proper or justified for him to exit the discussion. Right? He's, I'm not going to say yes, I'm not going to say no. In such a situation where there was some risk, he said it was okay. It's not inappropriate for you to not rule on this matter. And this was...
Rabbi, I'm troubled by this because, you know, while I'm sure these people were of high esteem, you know, why would you be giving the credibility to a Rav for a scientific issue?
So they're not evaluating the science of it. They're saying with the science...
They are, because they're saying don't take a vaccine.
So they weren't evaluating whether the vaccine was safe or not. They were saying, if these are the facts, with these facts, how do we apply that? How do we apply halacha? I mean, right now, let's say a scientist tells me it's 1 in 1,000. So with that 1 in 1,000, their question was, how do we apply that to halacha? They're not opining about whether a certain vaccine is safe or what the risks are. They're just saying, with the information that we are brought by the doctors, and we'll see further about what weight we give to doctors, but if, with that information, how does the halacha apply? What are the halakhic sources about possible risk? How do we apply the halacha? So about a month ago, it was probably about a month ago, now every this development, there's been so much in the past month about this, but when the first, I think when we first heard about the vaccine actually arriving and being implemented, so there was this called a kolkore, this poster that was, I didn't see any printed out copy of it, but was making its rounds that a couple of very prominent rabbis had signed onto it, saying that it was either prohibited or that they discouraged taking the vaccine. There were four or five names on there. And some people could tell initially that there was something fishy on it. One, it didn't have any actual signatures. Two, it was made up of a group of people who don't necessarily commonly appear on these types of things together. But this made its rounds. And there are people who were worried that maybe there was a real pushback against vaccines in the Haredi community. One of the names that was on that original poster was Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky, University of the Philadelphia Yeshiva. So shortly after this was released, so he wrote also released a copy of a handwritten letter in his own handwriting, copy of the translation, saying that it was a forgery. And he says, I never ruled one way or the other. I never ruled in source number 7. This is from December 14th. I never ruled regarding the new vaccination for coronavirus patients, and every person should consult his doctor and do as required for himself. So, again, this wasn't a formal halachic paper. This was a couple lines in a letter, just saying this is just dispelling the rumors that he had signed or attached his name to the statement, but. It seems at least that there is a precedent from Rav Giron to say that that not every posek necessarily has to rule definitively one way or the other. So he says, ask your doctor. We'll see other poskim maybe have ruled more strongly in favor of taking it. But that was, did anyone see this while it was making its rounds? Especially on social media, you hear all this, all this stuff as it comes out. And it's always good to allow some time before one accepts any information that's passed along or write about it, especially when it involves an individual. Sometimes things come out and people write all types of things, and then before you know it, it wasn't even real. So it's just something to be aware of. But this was, quote unquote, the hack for, 48 hours before it was dispelled that it was a forgery. So that's all good and well, because what have we been assuming up until now? We've been assuming, as Gerald pointed out, that there's some significant common danger to these vaccinations, right? And then you have to answer the question, in spite of that danger, is it worth risking in order to avoid a potentially greater risk? So Rusher Weiss then quotes other authorities, and he says himself regarding directly addressing the COVID vaccination, is one there of other responsa who said that so we remain in our view and offer praise to God if we have expert doctors who know how to prepare inoculations, and nobody has ever been harmed. They said this is a regular occurrence. He says, Velo Nizok Adam Olam, no one has ever been harmed. I don't know if it may be somewhat hyperbole, maybe someone somewhere, but he's Maisa Bechol Yom. It's something that happens every day. People get vaccinated. You don't hear about crumbs. You don't hear about people dying. So Rav Asher Weiss says, okay, we can consider it from the perspective, what if there's danger? And it seems so far from what he's presented that even if there is a significant danger, if the danger is less than the disease, then it would still be perhaps required to get it. But Rusher Weiss was saying, you could say regarding the smallpox vaccination, he says he was confident enough saying regarding the COVID vaccination that all this discussion about risk isn't really so relevant. Because he says, I'll read the translation, regarding, in source number 9, regarding the COVID-19 vaccines, pharmaceutical companies have conducted clinical studies of efficacy and safety with full transparency and external oversight. It says that over 80,000 people have participated in the placebo-controlled trials to date, and approximately half of the participants received the vaccine. Right, so you had 40,000 who received, 40,000 who had the placebo. And the tens of thousands who received the vaccine, not one died as a result. And of those who received the placebo, 6 died during the course of the study, compared to only 2 deaths in the vaccine group. And no link was found between their death and the vaccine. Meaning out of, let's say, 40,000 people who took the vaccine, 2 died, and there was no link between the vaccine and their dying. I know what happened. Let's say someone, God forbid, but gets, you know, hit by a truck after they get vaccinated. So that's not, you can't say that that's the vaccine had any effect. And either way, there were more people who died. We don't know the cause of death, but from not getting the vaccine. So it seems pretty clear that there was no link between the vaccine and death. So it seems the vaccine is safe. That this is not my area of expertise. I wasn't involved in the research, and also aren't so familiar with what criteria are used. But what I've heard from Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glatt and some of the experts in the field, that this is considered, as far as the threshold for safety, it's considered safe. Okay, that may be nice, but what if I say, well, it's only the doctors who are telling me that. Right? The doctors are telling me that this is safe. Well, how do I know it's safe? Why should I listen to the doctors? Right? There are probably people who say that, right? How do I know? Why should I believe the doctors? The doctors all observe the Torah? So we have to look about how does halacha require us to act on medical advice. Brother, my wife says what I do. She gave the feedback of this year. She says sometimes what I do is I'll present an extreme opinion, but I have to let people know that I'm not such an extremist. So you all know me. So but I'm asking the question, why should we? Some people may say, why should we trust doctors? Okay, so where do doctors play an active consulting role in halacha? Well, there are many areas, but one area in particular that we find even from the Mishnah and the Code of Jewish Law is a sick person on Yom Kippur. You also find a sick person on Shabbos, different pikuach nefesh cases. So how do you know if it's dangerous for someone to fast on Yom Kippur? How are you going to evaluate that? So under certain circumstances, the sick person has, we do consider that a person has reasonable understanding of their body. In certain cases, if they don't feel well, that could be enough. But you have different situations. Let's say a person says that they feel okay, but the doctor says they shouldn't fast. So what do you do? So this is a larger discussion, but some of the main points are as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says in source number 10, if the sick person and one doctor says that the sick person does not need to eat, meaning a person is has whatever mild ailment, but it's not dangerous to fast, but one doctor says they need to eat. So you have the person and you have one doctor who say they don't need to eat. The person is not feeling fine. The doctor says they look okay. Another doctor says that they need to eat. So that's the situation. If the sick person doesn't say anything, and one doctor says that it's necessary, so the sick person says, I'm neutral. The sick person says, I'm going to listen to the doctor. Doctor says, I don't have to eat. I'll fast. And the doctor says, I need to eat, I'll eat. So the rofe echad omer tzarech. One doctor says they need to eat. Ushnayim omer einot tzarech. And two say they don't need, so ein machil, machila noso. Then you don't feed them. So you go after the majority. So how do we balance? There are different formulations of this. So the Mishnah Brura says, ima rofe hu muflag b'chochma yoser macherim, if one doctor is more distinguished than another doctor, chokshin l'dvarav lachilo afshehem rabim negdo. Then in a case of potential danger to life, so we believe the expert doctors. Right? You have two doctors, meaning you have one doctor who's an expert doctor, and then who says that the patient needs to eat, then you have a not as expert doctor, but presumably it's not just a quack, it's someone who knows, but not as distinguished. And the patient is that they don't need to eat. So in that case of doubt, you would say they need to eat based on the opinion of the expert doctor. But avali muflag omer einot tzarich, but if the ex distinguished one says that he doesn't need to eat, ushnayim she'ein muflag in omer tzarich, but two are not as distinguished. Again, assuming they have their MDs with the equivalent, but they're not, you know, the head of whatever department. Holken acharov, minu machilinoso. So there are going to be different applications, different scenarios, but basically you have a balance of following both the majority and of the most distinguished. So if we apply that to our case, now these are cases of two against one and one's more distinguished, but Rav Asher Weiss says, and other posts say as well, is with a lot of vaccinations in general, even with the COVID vaccine, which is new, you're talking about the majority. I think it's fair to say, and if what I'm saying is incorrect, let me know, but it seems that the majority, both the majority and certainly the majority of expert doctors say that it's safe and say that it's advisable. So we look, that's when halacha requires that we determine what the risks are of a certain practice. So we, general rules, was we rely on the majority of doctors. Sometimes if it's an expert, it can offset that. But if you have the majority, it's Rashi Rabbi says, Rov Minyan Ubinyan, the majority of number and of distinction who say one thing, so then halachically that's what they're supposed to do. So when it comes to medicine, I'm just a consumer. I'm like an ignoramus. I don't know anything. How do I know it's safe? I don't know what's in the vaccine. But what do I do if the majority of expert doctors say that this is safe and this is something that we should do? So then that's what halacha would require me to do.
Unfortunately, sometimes the majority is wrong.
Okay. So I'll get there. Sometimes the majority is wrong. And also sometimes maybe there are real suspicions that they're wrong. So Rav Asher Weiss quotes different cases in the last couple of centuries where there were prominent rabbis who doesn't say specific reasons, but had some doubts about the doctor's recommendations. So during the cholera epidemic of 1873, Mordechai Edgar, so it's back in the cholera at that time, the Mordechai Edgar questioned the ruling of doctors, who apparently at that time said that everybody, even healthy individuals, need to eat on Yom Kippur. That was the ruling. And you could say, this may have been the equivalent of, everything has to close, or no matter what the size of the building is, only 10 people, right? So you could say it's the equivalent of the very, strict public health policies that maybe, raise some eyebrows and maybe go above and beyond. So the experts there were saying nobody should fast, even people who are completely healthy. So he says that Edinger was suspicious of this. And he questioned whether is it really the case that you could say that no one should fast on Yom Kippur, that it really poses a health threat to everyone. So, but what did he end up doing? He recalled that 40 years earlier, his uncle had ruled during a similar cholera epidemic that even healthy people should refrain from fasting on Tisha B'Av, as it based on the opinion of medical experts. So he says that even Rabbi Edinger, who was a little bit suspicious of this, that everyone has to eat on Yom Kippur, but he says at the end of the day, The doctors say that's what we should do, so that's what we should do. It shows the weight of listening to experts. Not just in general, this is sometimes with questions about fasting, and they do come up, is I think by default, a doctor, especially if they're not if you're not thinking halakhically, so all things being equal, you ask a doctor, should I fast or should I not fast? So all things being equal, a doctor will probably say, well, it's better to not forego food and drink for an entire day, right? All things being equal. So sometimes for practical advice, you'd have to ask your doctor. You could say that my religion, or if you ask a doctor who's Torah observant, even though we do listen to recommendations of doctors who are not Torah observant or not Jewish, but when asking a question to a doctor, they also have to be sure if they're saying don't eat just because it's always safer, or don't fast, it's always safer to fast, or if there's really reason not to fast. Presumably the doctor was aware of the religious reasons, but still said to eat. And that's what the rabbis at the time followed. So the question was, Rana's question was, well, what if the doctors are wrong? Right? That was the question?
You know, like I said, what if the majority is wrong? It could be doctors, or I'm thinking, like way back when the majority thought the earth was flat. Like there's lots of mistakes.
Right. So this, Rusher Weiss addressing this question. See, he knew you had the question. So addressing this question, he says there's a principle. Just before I say that, you're probably also correct that those what I've heard that some of the advice, particularly the famous example they quoted a lot during the past couple months of Rabbi Akiva Eiger in the 19th century, telling everyone to eat on Yom Kippur. It could have been that with cholera, I think the main issue was contamination of the water. That just as someone, that was the real problem. It could have been that eating and drinking on Yom Kippur may not have had such an effect. Obviously, if someone is sick, they need food. But it could have been that it may not have been necessary for them to eat on Yom Kippur. It could have been there was another problem that they weren't really aware of. So I think in both situations, so the doctors can be wrong, and that can go in both directions. They can be wrong and tell you that you need to be medically stringent about something, which would cause under normal circumstances a halakhic compromise, meaning they could be wrong. They could tell you that you really have to eat in Yom Kippur, whereas realistically it may not have made such a difference. Or in the opposite way, the doctors may say something that's dangerous, but the knowledge that's become dangerous hasn't yet been realized. So it can go both ways. Either say something that's unnecessary or something that's dangerous. So what are you supposed to do? So it sounds like historically and from the sources that you generally listen to the majority of expert doctors. But Rusher Weiss brings in a very interesting concept, which actually would like to discuss next week. If that's okay with everyone. The whole idea is masking and distancing, and what are we allowed to do during COVID? Meaning, why don't we say we shouldn't take any risks, right? Isn't it safer, all things being equal, to stay home? I mean, for some people, it is. But there's a principle, and it's a fascinating principle. And I put an attachment to an article by Rabbi Yosef Gabriel Bechav, who wrote an article very recently about this, is Shomer Pasayim Hashem, based on the Pasuk in Tehillim, basically Hashem protects the fools. And this is applied to the question how it's applied specifically, but the basic idea is that a person is permitted to enter situations that pose some risk if it's generally in the normal way of life. I mean, we're told we're not allowed to, we have to build a makkah, we're supposed to build a fence, we're not supposed to go into dangerous situations. But what about things like driving a car? Or then you get some questions about, or playing sports, or whatever, riding a bike, whatever it may be. There are things that we do in life that have some that are sometimes fatal. So how are we allowed to do it? Why should we be allowed to drive a car? Who's to say we can risk our life to get into a car? Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't be allowed to do it. So this is a principle of somar pasayim Hashem. It's applied to different areas in the Gemara, but it basically means that if there's something that's maybe either both common and poses a pretty negligible risk, even though it potentially could be fatal, so a person is allowed to do it. And the idea is that Hashem will offer some certain protection. Obviously, there are times where people unfortunately die in car accidents, but basically, it's considered that a person is allowed to take some risks. If it's common enough that people take those risks as part of everyday life, and the risks are pretty remote, and to whatever extent he does, Hashem protects them. I mean, maybe you are pasayim, maybe you are foolish by getting behind the wheel of a car. Who says we need to? But okay, people do it, and then Hashem protects us. There's also things like childbirth, or there are different areas of halacha where it applies. And actually, want to look at it? Totally good. Look at it next week and see. Well, what does that mean for us with living, at least until we're all vaccinated, but living with COVID? Are we allowed to go out? Do we have to stay home? What about going to mask? What about going to shul? So these will be questions that hinge a lot on this principle, Shomer Pasayim Hashem. What's considered reasonable risk to take, and what's considered an actual violation of risking one's life? So he says, Rosh Weiss says that according to this, we can rely on Shomer Pasayim Hashem, that the doctors say that this certain course of action is recommended. Okay, Hashem will protect. I mean, I don't think I'm doing justice to the principle, but that's the basic idea. It's the course of action. You can say in our lives, the course of action is you listen to the doctors to take the vaccine. And, you know, Hashem will protect. Or at least from our perspective, we're doing what we're supposed to do. So it's like with any area of halacha. It could be that in Shemayim we're wrong, but lo b'shemayim, we function according to the systems of halacha and what we know about the world. And he says that in this case, the overwhelming majority of scientific researchers and medical experts are clearly of the view the vaccine poses negligible risk of serious danger. And he says, especially true as the coronavirus pandemic is rapidly spreading in our communities and the world, causing many deaths each day. They're saying 400,000, it's terrible. So certainly any risk is much, much more remote than the risk of getting COVID, even to healthy people. So Rav Asher Weiss says, based on this, this is in light of all of this, that it's certainly appropriate for every person to be vaccinated. But does that mean there's an obligation? So Rav Asher Weiss says that he says, they can't say that it's an obligation to be vaccinated. He says, someone who wants to continue to wear a mask and to distance, okay, it's within his rights to do so. But he says that the kol shiyoser anashim, chantu anashim, yargishu, betuchim yoser, yivulcha mechitzos, beinish l'reyehu, Yigavir Asakana. But he says, what's going to be the problem? He says, he's acknowledging that he's really saying it's recommended to be vaccinated. He's saying another problem is going to be if some people, the more people get vaccinated, and it is something to be aware of, then people are going to let their guard down. So he says, if someone is really willing to wear a mask and distance for as long as that's required from a health perspective, he says, I can't say that they're forced to get the vaccination. But he says it's going to be problematic because then people will, when more people get vaccinated, there's going to be a false sense of security. So he says it's certainly a pious action to get vaccinated. He's certainly recommending it, but he stopped short of saying that it's a halachic requirement. I saw there was a call with Rabbi Mordechai Willig and Rabbi Dr. Aaron Glot, and I want to send it out afterwards because it's fascinating to watch. So Rabbi Willig said that he, with the greatest respect to Rasher Weiss, and I have this tremendous respect, he said that he was disappointed in that he didn't say that it was an obligation. He said because he's saying it must be that whatever that his facts are maybe coming from different sources or presented differently. Because Rabbi Willick says that as far as he's, you know, been briefed, masking and distancing, it helps a lot. It reduces the transmission tremendously, but it's not foolproof. there are people who have, taken every safety precaution, have worn them, and then have contracted the virus. And it's not 100%. Okay, the vaccine maybe not be 100%, but so, and I think also he's concerned, and I know this, he's being concerned at various points, is it's all fine and well if people actually stick to the 6 feet and always wearing a mask and wearing it properly. The nature of people, even people who mean well, it falls a little bit off, or you talk to someone, you get a little bit closer, meaning it's people are people. So we do the best we can, but if we can vaccinate, so Rabbi Willig is that he feels that forever, who's ever able to at the point where they're allowed to, and who's ever able to from a health perspective should vaccinate. And actually the OU, Orthodox Union, the Rabbinical Council of America, released a statement where initially they said that it was recommended, but then Rabbi Willig says he spoke to Rabbi Moshe Hauer, one of the heads of the OU. Actually, they revised their statement to say that pursuant to the advice of your personal healthcare provider, the Torah obligation to preserve our lives, which you saw above, and the lives of others, requires us to vaccinate for COVID-19 as soon as a vaccine becomes available. And he says the applicability of this, is still evolving, but they say because distancing and masking only go so far, and because people are people, so he felt that when one is able to do so, if their doctor, barring any other condition, they'll be required to be vaccinated. Now, so just in the halakhic discussions, we say there's a mitzvah of the Torah to preserve health, and to avoid danger and to actively prevent danger. We said that if the risks are remote and the benefits outweigh the risks, so the halakhic authorities says that one is allowed to take the risk, may even be required to. And because the COVID vaccine, as far as we know, as far as the experts have conveyed and the tests have shown, poses a very negligible risk. So certainly the benefits outweigh the risks, and either it's from the halakhic authorities, major halakhic authorities of our time. There could be others who disagreed. Shmuel Kamenetsky said that he didn't want to rule, at least at this time, and that everyone should consult their healthcare provider. Usher Weiss says it's definitely recommended, and there Mordechai Willig, and also in conjunction with Rav Herschel Schachter and Rav David Cohen, say that it would actually be required. There's a lot more discussed at really at every step of this, but that's the basic background of how the postgame related to the COVID vaccine. One more point, less of a halachic point, but I think an important hashkafic point, an important point from just how we view the world, how we view Hashem's involvement in the world. This is something that's sobering, but I think is very important. This is from an article by Rabbi Gideon Rothstein, who's a student of Aaron Lichtenstein. You notice what he said, just not some kind of, sort of extremist who doesn't accept science. But if you listen to what he says, he's saying that he's worried that the way some people are thinking about the vaccine contradicts basic Jewish belief. And he's saying practically should get the vaccine. Practically he will get the vaccine. And that, of course, we should always follow what medical advice tells us, not be lax about it. But he says that the problem is those of us who believe in God, who continues to be involved with creation, can't subscribe to that phrasing, meaning that it'll be just immune and the virus will go away. It says they accurately say the research gives us good reason to expect the vaccine will have this effect leading to this outcome. But we shouldn't say that the vaccine is what saves us. He says that should God, Khalilah, God forbid, decide that we don't merit the return to normalcy, so the vaccine would be irrelevant. Meaning he gives people tremendous wisdom to develop it, but if Hashem decides that we don't merit this return to normalcy, so then that would be irrelevant. And we see that the fact that different strands are developing, again, the vaccine should work against that. But and he points out, and this is something that's very, it's sobering, but I think it's important to know, is COVID only happened to the extent that it did, and only spread to the extent that it did, or pandemic could only happen as it did, specifically because we're so advanced, right? If we weren't so advanced, It's because we have international travel, because people go, it's because we basically conquer nature, right? We everything's in our control. That has enabled this to spread. So we shouldn't think that, you know, now the world, the tiny virus has brought the world to its feet in 2020, right? We thought we had mastery over the entire world. But then we see that, you know, Hashem shows us for whatever reasons that there are things that as advanced as we are, we're not able to overcome. So he says, well, just when we think about the vaccine, we should think about it as similar to how we relate to Purim, right? In Purim, in the Megillah, Hashem's name isn't mentioned, and the salvation came about through the means. Mordechai and Esther were the vehicles through which salvation came about. But we certainly know that it was Hashem who was there, Hashem who caused the salvation. And so obviously we should thank Hashem for the tremendous wisdom he gives. Hashem gives mankind wisdom to discover the world and develop these types of vaccines. But we shouldn't think that once the vaccine comes and once we're vaccinated and it's Hashem and we have the herd immunity, that means that, okay, all our davening, all our tehillim, now we've conquered. No, Hashem is always in charge. And we have to remember that when we had the vaccine, we should thank Hashem for providing it for us, but realize that the vaccine is only a means. At the end of the day, we should still daven that Hashem provides us with revealed good and allows us to return back to normalcy. And hopefully when we do return to normalcy, we can return in a way that we take something from this experience. But we should not lose sight of the fact that the vaccine, that we still have a need to daven, and Hashem is in charge, and he's the only one for whom we should rely on as the cause for our faith. So Mitzvah Hashem, he should cause us to have revealed good.